Party's liaison to the Berkeley University community, had also heard the rumors about a new weapon. Some of these rumors were actually published when local newspapers quoted a congressman boasting about the weapons research being conducted at Berkeley. Rossi Lamonitz heard Nelson say in a public speech, "I've heard some of these congressmen talk about how there's some big weapon being developed here. I'll tell you, people's wars aren't being won by big weapons." And then Nelson went on to argue that this war would be won when a second front was opened in Europe. The Soviets were fighting 4/5 of the Nazi armies and desperately needed relief. "It's going to take the American people making that sacrifice. That's how this war is going to be won." Lamonitz had met Nelson at various public meetings of the Communist Party and, he said, respected him a great deal. He regarded Nelson as a hero of the Spanish Republic, a veteran labor organizer and a courageous critic of racial segregation. By his own account, Lamonitz, while strongly sympathetic to the party in many ways, never formally became a member. "I attended some Communist Party meetings," he said, "because at that time meetings were much more open. There wasn't any great distinction. Who was officially a member or what it took to be officially a member, I can't tell you to this day. It just wasn't all that conspiratorial." In his memoirs, Nelson described his relationship to Oppenheimer students like Lamonitz, Weinberg, and others. "I was responsible for working with some people from the university, getting them to conduct classes and discussions. A number of Oppenheimer's graduate students in the field of physics were quite active. Our contacts were more on their terms than ours. They lived in a more rarefied intellectual and cultural atmosphere, although they were friendly and not at all pretentious." By the early spring of 1943, the FBI had installed a microphone in Nelson's home. In the early morning hours of March 30, 1943, Bureau agents overheard a man they could identify only as Joe talking about his work at the radiation lab. Joe had arrived at Nelson's home at 1:30 a.m. and was obviously anxious to speak with him. The two men talked in whispers. Nelson began by saying that he was looking for a comrade who was absolutely trustworthy. Joe insisted that he was that man. Joe then explained that certain portions of the project were to be moved to some remote section of the country hundreds of miles away, where highly secret experimental explosions could be carried out. The conversation then turned to discussing the professor. Nelson commented that, "He's very much worried now and we make him feel uncomfortable." Joe agreed, saying that the professor, the transcript makes clear that the reference is to Oppenheimer, had "kept me off the project because he's afraid of two things. First of all, that my being there will attract more attention. That's one excuse. The other is, he fears that I will propagandize. A strange thing for him to fear, but he's changed a bit." Nelson: "I know that." Joe: "You won't hardly believe the change that has taken place." Nelson then explained that he used to be very intimate with the guy, not only from a party relationship, but also for a personal relationship. Oppenheimer's wife, he said, used to be the wife of his, Nelson's, best friend, who was killed in Spain. Nelson said he had always tried to keep Oppenheimer politically up to date, but that he is not so sound as he would have people believe. "Well, you know, he probably impresses you fellows as brilliant in his field, and I don't doubt that. But in other ways, he had to admit a couple of times that he was off. When he tried to teach Marx, you know, and when he tried to teach Lenin to somebody else. You know what I mean. He's just not a Marxist." Joe: "Yes, it's interesting. He rather resents the fact that I don't have deviations." At this, Nelson and Joe laughed. Nelson then observed that Oppenheimer would like to be on the right track, but I think now he's gone a little further away from whatever associations he's had with us. Now he's got the one thing in the world, and that's this project, and that project is going to wean him from his friends. Clearly, Nelson was annoyed with his old friend's attitude. He knew Oppenheimer wasn't interested in money. "No," interjected Joe, "he's quite wealthy." But he sensed that it was his ambition that was now driving Oppenheimer's actions. "He wants to make a name for himself, unquestionably." Joe disagreed. "No, that's not necessarily it, Steve. He's internationally very well known." Nelson: "Well, I'll tell you, to my sorrow, his wife is influencing him in the wrong direction." Joe: "It's something we all suspected." Having established that Oppenheimer was not going to be forthcoming with information about the project, Nelson now focused on Joe and tried to coax him into revealing information about the project that might be useful to the Soviets. The FBI's 27-page transcript, based on an illegal bug, then has Joe cautiously, even anxiously, discussing details of the project that might be helpful to America's wartime ally. Speaking in a whisper, Nelson asked how soon such a weapon would become available. Joe's guess was that it would take at least 1 year to produce enough of this separated material for an experimental trial. Oppie, for instance, Joe volunteered, thinks that it might take as long as a year and a half. So, Nelson said, as far as the question of turning the material over, I don't know whether he'd come through, but I think it's done every day. At this point in the transcript, an FBI or Army counterintelligence official analyzing the transcript writes, "said in such a fashion as to indicate that Oppenheimer was overly cautious in withholding such information from Steve." If the transcript implicates Joe in passing information to Nelson, it also demonstrates that Oppenheimer had become security conscious, and Nelson concluded that he had become uncooperative and overly cautious. An FBI transcript of Nelson's conversation with the then-still-unidentified Joe was soon delivered to Lieutenant Colonel Boris T. Pasch at G2 Army Intelligence in San Francisco. Pasch, chief of counterintelligence for the 9th Army Corps on the West Coast, was stunned. He had spent much of his career hunting communists. A native-born San Franciscan, he had as a young man accompanied his father, a Russian Orthodox bishop, to Moscow during World War I. When the Bolsheviks seized power, Pasch joined the counter-revolutionary White Army and fought in the 1918-1920 Civil War. He returned to America after marrying a Russian aristocrat. During the 1920s and 30s, while employed as a high school football coach, Pasch spent his summers as a reserve U.S. Army intelligence officer. After America entered World War II, he assisted in the internment of Japanese Americans on the West Coast, and then was assigned as the Manhattan Project's chief counterintelligence officer. Pasch had little patience for bureaucracy. He considered himself a man of action. While his admirers described him as cunning and shrewd, others regarded him as a crazy Russian. Pasch considered the Soviet Union America's mortal enemy, and not just a temporary wartime ally. Pasch quickly leaped to the conclusion that the Nelson-Joe transcript was not only evidence of espionage, but also confirmation that his suspicions about Oppenheimer were well-founded. The next day, he flew to Washington, where he briefed General Groves on the transcript. Because the wiretap on Nelson was illegal, the authorities couldn't press charges against him or the mysterious Joe. But they could use the information to trace the full extent of Nelson's activities and contacts inside the radiation lab. Lieutenant Colonel Pasch was soon authorized to investigate whether the Berkeley lab was the target of espionage. Pasch later testified that he and his colleagues knew that Joe had furnished technical information and timetables pertaining to the bomb project to Steve Nelson. Initially, Pasch's investigation focused on Lomonitz, merely because Pasch had information that Lomonitz was a Communist Party member. A tail was put on Lomonitz, and one day in June 1943, he was observed standing just outside UC Berkeley's Sather Gate with several friends. They were posing, with their arms draped over each other's shoulders, for a photographer who routinely sold his services to students on campus. After the photo was taken and Lomonitz and his friends walked away, a government agent walked up to the photographer and bought the negative. Lomonitz's friends were quickly identified as Joe Weinberg, David Bohm, and Max Friedman, all of them Oppie's students. From that moment on, these young men were marked as subversives. Lieutenant Colonel Pasch testified that his investigators determined in the first place that these four men I mentioned were very frequently together. Without divulging investigative techniques or operational procedures, Pasch explained that we had an unidentified man and we had this photograph. As a result of our study, we determined and were sure that Joe was Joseph Weinberg. He also claimed that he had sufficient information to name both Weinberg and Bohm as Communist Party members. Pash was convinced that he had stumbled upon a sophisticated ring of wily Soviet agents, and he felt that any means necessary should be used to break the suspects. In July 1943, the FBI field office in San Francisco reported that Pash wanted to kidnap Lomanitz, Weinberg, Bohm, and Friedman, take them out to sea in a boat, and interrogate them after the Russian manner. The FBI noted that any information gathered in such a fashion could not be used in court, but apparently Pash did not intend to have anyone available for prosecution after questioning. This was too much for the FBI. Pressure was brought to bear to discourage this particular activity. Pash nevertheless stepped up his surveillance of Steve Nelson. The FBI had placed a microphone in Nelson's office even before they bugged his home, and the conversations they overheard suggested that he had methodically gathered information on the Berkeley Radiation Lab from a number of young physicists whom he knew to be sympathetic to the Soviet war effort. As early as October 1942, the FBI bug picked up a conversation between Nelson and Lloyd Lehman, an organizer for the Young Communist League, who also worked at the Rad Lab. Lehman advised Nelson that a very important weapon was being developed and that he was in on the research end of this development. Nelson then asked Lehman if Opp knew he was a YCLer, and added that Opp was too jittery. Nelson went on to state that Opp at one time was active in the party but was then inactive, and further stated that the reason the government left Opp alone was because of his ability in the scientific field. After noting that Oppenheimer had worked on the Teachers' Committee, a reference to the Teachers' Union, and the Spanish Aid Committee, Nelson wryly commented that he can't cover his past.